Soikles. United States is for Fig Newton. It was named after Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh.
I haven't had a Fig Newton in a really long time.
It's because they're bad cookies.
Man, you're really downing on a lot of things that I like this morning. Jeez, don't yuck my yum.
Don't what?
Don't yuck my yum.
Got it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin on this Friday, July 14th. As we round out one more hour, and then the weekend is here. Happy early birthday to Mama Bry.
Oh, when
which is tomorrow.
When is, oh, it's tomorrow.
Yeah. And so, but I am very excited. We still, like, as I said, we have a guest-packed Friday, back-to-back guests. And so I'm very excited to welcome back our next guest, Quentin Claibon, who is a senior research director for Institute for Reforming Government. Because, and I think there's not a specific, well, there is a specific topic that I'm excited to talk to you about, but not something that is concrete. So I'm really excited to kind of see where this goes, because you are someone who has spent your career in education.
Correct.
In one way or another. You do policy stuff for IRG, but you also work, is it Milwaukee Excellence School?
St. Marcus Lutheran.
St. Marcus Lutheran. So you work with students, you bring them back to Dartmouth. Like,
yep.
you are very much in the weeds.
Yes, and I am Milwaukee's only Republican, yes.
And that's, well, this is what I mean. And then, but you are also a Republican and a conservative, and you have a conservative point of view when it comes to education policy. And I feel like I'm excited to have this conversation with you, because you are also someone who is like walking the walk, and like and you're not someone who's holding opinions without actually doing the work.
Right.
Right, which a lot of us always do, is like the things that we think the way that it should be based on of our experiences or what we the limited knowledge that we have, but we're not necessarily in the field doing stuff and seeing what's actually working, what's not. You are someone who has opinions on education, but you're also working and have worked in education. So I'm excited to talk to you about this, because I feel like we are very much in the deep end of culture wars in education.
Aren't we always?
Or is this like an ebb and flow thing, which you can answer that in a second, but it does feel like we just had the affirmative action Supreme Court case come down. The UW system spending was hinged on DEI programs. We just had Melissa Temple on, and I'm getting stories based on a video I posted yesterday of kind of around the state, different school boards and the safe space sign policies and all this different stuff. There's all this culture war stuff, and I think specifically with DEI, or programs that are meant to be inclusive for typically minority students, and that minority both racially and also for LGBTQ. If we take them away, my feeling is like discrepancies still happen. Like those discrepancies that are those programs are trying to fix, mm-hmm, are still going to be there. And so much of what I hear from the right is, these programs, we need to get rid of these programs. I don't hear as much about what should replace them to try to fix the problems that those programs are trying to fix. And so I'm so excited to talk to you, because I think you have some ideas.
Yeah, some on the ground, some
yes,
on research. But yeah, absolutely. So preface to this, my name is spelled Quinton. Despite that, I am a white person talking to a white person. It sounds like we're going to have, so we are bringing those outside perspectives. But it sounds like maybe in the future, we can maybe bring some St. Marcus folks,
totally,
or other folks on to maybe share the, you know, lived
experience
of,
yeah,
that, which,
totally,
would be great. So I'm excited for that. So this is secondhand, but I think it still holds. So there's some research. Let's kind of start with this. There's some research from Raj Chetty, who's a very famous Harvard professor, actually emigrated to Milwaukee when he was 9, graduated from university school. So he's a Milwaukee native. And he's had some research go viral in the New York Times and a bunch of things. And basically he says two big things. One is that, let's just talk about black and white for now, because we have a short segment. So there is not a black-white achievement gap, either in school or in ultimate life outcomes. black girls and white girls who start at the same income level, wherever that may be, they have the same life outcomes, which is actually incredible and speaks a lot to, you know, the benefits of living in America. It's just that the gaps appear because, of course, there are many more low-income black young girls.
Yes.
The achievement gap ultimately comes from boys. It's black boys who who have that entire achievement gap created. So he says a few things.
Mm-hmm. So just to rephrase what you said, you're saying with white boys and black boys who are in the same income level.
Yes, so low income.
There's still an achievement gap?
Absolutely. So whether you're a low income white boy, your chances of succeeding and climbing up the ladder are much better than those of being a low income black boy.
Okay.
Middle income, high income, high income. So that's where all that achievement gap comes from. And so he says, actually, integration comes from different things at different income levels. If you're at the low income level, it comes from your neighborhood integration and your religious institutions. Middle income, it's, are you integrated at your job? High income, were you integrated at college? So that every kind of income segment has integration come from a different place. So it's kind of like, I was fortunate enough to go to Dartmouth College out in New Hampshire, fancy school, right?
I dated someone while they were at Dartmouth, so I know. I've been in those frat
basements. I like to bring it up just randomly. I did it at my restaurant order last night. Dartmouth College, go green. Micromanaging Ivy League schools is not going to create racial equality in America, yeah. Right? We're talking more about what is UW doing? What is the UW system doing? So let's just say it's a done deal. We take out affirmative action. We take out all of these integration programs. There are a few things that we can do. So one thing that we've seen is there are a ton of nonprofits doing incredible work, basically replicating what's going on at UW, but doing it much better. So there's a group called All in Milwaukee, which basically does two things. It identifies talent in high school from an income level, but because it's Milwaukee, it ends up being pretty racially diverse, counsels them on getting into college, and then provides them scholarships to stay in state rather than going to Dartmouth or going to an HBCU, and then provides them academic and emotional support while they're in college. So they're replicating all of the things that the UW DEI programs do, but because they've built those relationships in ninth grade, it's a lot more effective. Otherwise, right now, kids are going to UW-Madison. They're meeting their various counselors who haven't known their lives, and they're expected to show up if they're depressed or if they're failing a class. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever screwed up in a class, you're not exactly raring to tell people that. And so you need these relationships built earlier. So All in Milwaukee and nonprofits like it, whether that's through donations from private citizens or put it in the budget. You can absolutely send line items to great nonprofits like this. I think that's how we could start some integration at the UW system.
I want to come back. We're talking to Quentin Claibon, who's a senior research director for Institute for Reforming Government and has worked in education his entire career. And we're talking about kind of DEI as a whole, DEI specifically, and what could replace it, because there has been so much of what we've been hearing is trying to get rid of it. But by just getting rid of it, it doesn't necessarily solve the problems that they're trying to solve. And it's interesting what you just said as far as that program. But specifically, if we were talking about Dartmouth and we're talking about UW system, UW-Madison is massive. And no matter what, when you show up, no matter what class you are, what race you are, learning how to advocate for yourself in such a massive sea of such a big public university is difficult for everyone versus a Dartmouth where,
yeah.
If I remember correctly, my ex had like his professor email him when he didn't show up to class.
Yes, absolutely.
There's a little more coddling.
Much to my chagrin.
So I guess like, when you think about being a first-generation student, so you're saying that, I guess in how that program works, is it people who then stick with them throughout?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. The two things that you need are, one, people in your corner, and two, seeing success for people that you identify with. And that could be religion, that could be income, that could be geography, that could be race. One way is, like I said, the nonprofits. Second thing is, you said Madison is very large. I actually don't think it's large enough. I don't think it's serving enough students. If it's going to be our flagship university, it could absolutely expand. I think that should be a priority of the state, both private and public.
Well, that gets into budget.
It absolutely does, and I may steer away from that.
Okay.
Admitting more students and recruiting from geographic tracks, which they do have that information, to expand the college— all of the students that I talk to at St. Marcus and at other schools like St. Marcus in Milwaukee, they're going to Howard, they're going to Fisk, they're going to Xavier, because Wisconsin gave them the state of Wisconsin gave them a very bad experience, and UW-Madison is not filled with people like them. All they want is to see someone who worked hard in school, who is maybe coming from a middle-class background, who's going to succeed in life. And that's why they go out of state, and that's why they stay out of state. All Madison has to do, sounds simple, if Madison would expand and if Madison would recruit more heavily from these tracks, you would have a critical mass of students of color at Wisconsin-Madison, and it just kind of creates this natural reaction. Students never go to UW-Madison because Madison doesn't show up in their high schools. It doesn't recruit. They're not getting the materials. So one way to perhaps increase recruitment at Madison is to do what other states do, automatic acceptance and automatic scholarships based on income or based on geography. So rather than students having to apply and not know if they're going to get a financial aid package, let them in, send them a letter saying that we prize you, we want you here, and that we're actually going to give you a scholarship to go here. That can be a really powerful experience for these students.
So you just said a lot, and we only have 2 minutes before our next break, but I think some of the, and correct me if I'm summarizing this wrong, but it feels like some of the things that you're putting forward right now, because so much of what I feel like I interpret the we need to get rid of DEI is everyone wanting it to be like this meritocracy. And at least short answer, we can get into it further after the break. But like that sounds counterintuitive to what the programs you're suggesting.
Meritocracy absolutely matters, but providing supports and giving everyone making everyone aware of these opportunities, getting your foot in the door, that's the thing that really matters.
Okay. All right. Well, I knew this was going to go fast. Quinn Claiborne's still going to be here after the break, and we're going to continue talking about what other alternatives exist besides the DEI programs as they exist right now to help with income outcomes and racial outcomes and get us all to the place that we say we want to be. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Stick around.
Stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are talking to Quinton Claiborne, who's a senior research director at Institute for Reforming Government, someone who has spent his entire career in education, and yet is also still a conservative and a Republican. And we're having a conversation that's really centered on DEI, because it's been, whether we're talking about the UW system, sometimes we're talking about Milwaukee. DEI is a big concept, but I think in this case, because of limited time, we're talking about DEI as it pertains to the UW system. And I feel like what we were just talking about the previous segment, and that's why I asked you here, I was like, all right, if DEI were to go away, what replaces it? But and I think what's interesting is that you come from a place that you're still recognizing that we haven't solved racism. We haven't solved the racial disparities that we have in that the UW system in Wisconsin. Whereas I feel like other people who are making the argument to get rid of DEI are saying maybe that we have,
yeah,
or that these programs are inherently racist. And so that's why we can't have it. And it's a meritocracy. But I feel like listening to you, which is why I'm excited to talk to you, because I feel like it's a more honest conversation, is instead of the program itself is racist and bad and fires people up when we talk about it, it's like, but is it actually doing what it says that it's doing? Because that's also always been a critique, not always, but I think been a critique of UW-Madison, is like, it's only ever been at most like 6% Black, even though I think Wisconsin is 12% Black.
Exactly.
And that's including like how many people there are like on athletic scholarships. And so your argument is that you just don't think the program is working.
Yeah, and I think that's where I come down on the conservative side is a program that sounds nice and is wonderful is either not getting bang for your buck or is not working entirely. I think... and when we're making these arguments about racial equality, like I am Lutheran, so I you know, believe in the humanity and you know, God chosenness of all people, and I care about that. But truly, if we want a really effective state, we're not going to get there with like 6% proficiency in Milwaukee. We're not going to get there with 6% enrollment at UW-Madison. So it truly is about the future economic and social integration of our state. And that's why it's so important, even aside from just, you know, basic human rights stuff.
Yes, that
also
stuff.
That whole thing.
So I guess it's all in Milwaukee was one of the programs you argued. But like ultimately, even if that funding, that still needs to be funded. And so do you feel like there is an appetite from conservatives or Republican lawmakers to make those statewide programs? And granted, obviously the majority of the diverse populations in Milwaukee and Madison, but like make those statewide programs and actually adequately fund them to the point that like, because I think that's when we come back to, it's still something to deal with race, even if you frame it as income because of the overlap of how disproportionately poor our Black community is, like those two things go hand in hand. Like, do you feel like, even if you know personally as Quentin, like this is what you think would work, do you think there is like political will to do that?
Yeah, I think, it's tricky. You have to, I think conservatives often ask for the results first. So there was just a giant amount of K-12 education mm-hmm. funding, not just in just kind of district schools overall, and in voucher schools and charter schools, but also in reading. They're investing millions of dollars in reading for a bill that is arrived on Governor Evers' desks yesterday, if anyone
this
wants.
This is the phonics bill.
Yes, this is the phonics bill, yeah. Transform reading. And that's a historic investment solely in reading that is directly going to almost entirely public schools. And so why are they doing that? Because they've seen it work in Mississippi, in Florida, and in Massachusetts. And so they are willing to fund it where there are results. I think oftentimes progressives make the argument, because racial equality is good, because we need to integrate it, therefore you should fund these things. I think conservatives often ask for the evidence before the funding, which is often tricky. So where do we go from there? Start with these pilots. All in Milwaukee was a very tiny program when it started. Got some outside funding from Minnesota, I believe.
How long has it been around?
I may not know that, but I'm going to say 5 years.
Okay.
But it's grown just exponentially because it had proven success rates, not just of recruiting students and keeping them in Wisconsin, but also in their success rates. I believe that their first graduating class came out last year or this year. And so building pilots like those can get funded. Those are not giant $1 billion line items. Those are $5 million. Those are $10 million. If those are proven successful, you can expand those. And I do think there's an appetite for that because as Wisconsin becomes less and less white, especially at those younger, especially in people in their aughts, 10s and 20s, I think people realize that the economic future of Wisconsin depends on making sure that everybody has a piece of the pie.
Is there examples of it working in other states? Like you just said, for reading, we looked at Florida, we looked at Mississippi. Is there other states who have similar, bigger programs that are similar to
at the college level? There's a very famous program in Texas that basically said if you are in the top, 5% of your graduating class, you automatically get admitted to the flagship UT Austin. And because Texas is in some places very segregated, because you're drawing from each high school, that actually naturally created income and geography and racial integration. There's a bill actually that I believe Republicans proposed a month ago that would do that in Wisconsin, that would draw from everywhere. They're thinking about it more in the rural area, but it also would have that effect in Milwaukee. So those are programs that could work at the college level.
It's interesting because, and we're already running out of time, but exactly what you were saying, I think on its face when that bill got introduced, because it was on the heels of, you know, my Jimmy didn't get into UW-Madison, which are real stories. Like there's very high achieving kids who don't get into Madison. But someone made the point, and I actually saw this point get circulated, that it does have, if you think about it holistically, and if we say every school, the top 5%, top 1%, whatever it would end up being, is that it does have a lot of kids from different schools who would end up getting admitted that aren't in Middleton.
Yes, let's
we only got 1 minute left.
Yes, absolutely. Short answer. Let's admit that the 1990s of everybody working together is gone in Wisconsin, at least for the foreseeable future. I think the next best solution is to have things that work for all people for different reasons. And maybe programs like that would be an example. And the reading bill, I think, would be another example.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have to have you back because this was way too fast. Quentin Claibon is the Senior Research Director for Institute for Reforming Government. I feel like we need to get a beer and talk and solve more problems.
Absolutely. I mean, gosh, we can take down income inequality, I think, over a beer. That'd be easy.
Totally. All right. Well, when we come back, Jacob Resnick from Wisconsin Watch is going to be here. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Because that's what friends are supposed to do. Oh, yeah. Ooh. Ooh. You can count on me because I can count on you.
Back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we are rounding out this Friday with our final guest, who I'm very welcoming back. We had Jacob Resnick, investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch, on earlier this year when we were talking about the cryptocurrency mine up in, I am now blanking on which city it was in.
Park Falls.
Yes. But now we have you back because this headline caught my eye this week of your most recent story for Wisconsin Watch with the headline, Wisconsin Billionaires Quietly Bankroll Effort to Shrink State's Social Safety Net. You don't say. Well, you know what? I think we all knew that the Republican lawmakers have been trying to squash our social safety net. What seems more breaking news from your report is who is trying, is behind that, who is funding it, who would like to see that happen, not just in Wisconsin, but across the country. And so I guess not to, let's not bury the lead. What is the Foundation for Government Accountability and the Opportunity Solutions Project?
Right. Well, FGA is part of the State Policy Network.
Okay.
And there, which is this kind of sprawling, overarching, conservative network of foundations that have a very strong legislative agenda across the country, both federally and in state houses, and they have presences in pretty much all 50 states. FGA is one of the Florida affiliates. In Wisconsin, we know like the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, mm-hmm. Badger Institute, these kinds of activist law firms and think tanks are in Wisconsin, But FGA is based in Florida, but they've branched out, and so now they've got lobbyists pretty much in almost every state house. They've got three retained lobbyists in Wisconsin, two of which are in state. They've got staff here, and I think they've got about 115 staff members across the country. And they're bankrolled by tens of millions of dollars from Bradley Foundation in Milwaukee, and also Liz and Dick Uline, who, you know, were also very active in, for example, the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And they also get money from other foundations that also fund things like ALEC, the who do like the model legislation around the country, was big as well. And, you know, so that's basically who they are. Opportunity Solutions Network is their lobbying arm because nonprofits, which are 501c3, are very limited on how much direct lobbying they can do. So they have like a branch, which is a 501c4. Which is also a black hole for where the funding comes, but they share office space. I've got, you know, the business card from the communications director, who's a former comms guy for the state legislature.
Adam Gibbs.
And he, yeah, and he has FGA, but then when he testifies, when he does his lobbying, he says, well, I'm actually a visiting fellow for Opportunity Solutions Network. And this is something that actually is a problem on across the political spectrum, across the ideological spectrum, and it's not something that the IRS is just not enforcing.
So that was going to be my question, because I do want to get to the intentions behind, you know, some of the bills that this group has been behind. But the secrecy around their funding, how they're allowed to kind of coexist and have a separation, wink, wink, between their lobbying division and their nonprofit division. Unfortunately, that is something that is happening also with left groups as well, right? As far as when we think about some of the really big donors and how donor tables and funding kind of happens when it comes to politics, like, it's murky across the board, is my understanding.
Yeah, it is. And there was a Supreme Court case in the last year or so that basically codified the fact that nonprofits don't have to disclose their donors. And, environmental groups like Sierra Club, for example, the early policy came, I think, during the civil rights era when a deep South state, I forget which one it was, I think it might have been Alabama, tried to subpoena for the list for the NAACP and, you know, to try to find who the civil rights activists were in their state, you know, and there was like, there's real privacy concerns. So I mean, this is going back and forth about like donor concerns, the rights of, the rights of affiliations and things like that. But that legal argument has now morphed to allow, you know, super mega donors to hide their money in very politically active foundations like FGA.
Yeah. And so you said it in the article and you said it just now, but because you said part of the reason why getting away with it is because of the underfunding, understaffed nature of the IRS right now. So technically, some of the things they're doing, they shouldn't be doing, because if the IRS was funded and staffed, they would be catching them?
And make it a priority as well.
Okay. Well, that's great. Yeah. Great. But those 80,000 IRS agents are coming to get you. So good thing we stripped that from happening.
What a relief.
So to back up a little bit, because we in Wisconsin, and I want to get to some of the bills that they've backed and been behind, but because we have Tony Evers, we have split government, they've been less effective here. So in some of the other states where there's not split government, what are some of the other examples where FGA has been behind bills that maybe some of the bills that have made national news?
They were successful in, I think, in Arkansas to loosen child labor protections, for example. There is also in South Dakota as well. It's still in the Missouri House right now. It hasn't gone that far. They've been also very active in election laws in Wisconsin and also in other states about trying to increase voter ID kind of things and different checks. There was an idea of having two different voter rolls here in Wisconsin. One, so if you're taken off the voter roll, you'd be like permanently purged. And so then clerks would actually have to have two rolls. Like, oh, used to be. And, you know, they pushed that idea that was considered problematic by the nonpartisan clerks in Wisconsin. They're also very against Medicare expansion. Medicaid expansion. One of the initiatives that they pushed against was automatic re-enrolling in Medicaid, so that if you're eligible for Medicaid, you have to proactively like go to your state government website. Anyone's ever had to try to access benefits in Wisconsin or other states, it's usually not that simple. And so the argument goes, people who are already have enough problems and are living on the crack, that might not have the means or the education or the time or the wherewithal to do that kind of thing. So they'll just fall for the wayside. I mean, they're very ideologically driven that the state social net is holding people back. And this argument that having unemployment insurance keeps people on the couch. That was an argument that was put forward a lot during the pandemic when there was extra federal, the PUA came through and there was extra money and it was also extended. Although, after the smoke cleared, I was just looking back at the research and found that the worker disincentive kind of scare stories was not borne out in the data. PUA did not keep people from returning to the workplace. Because there were some states
that actually... Can you say that again? Because I feel like it's worth repeating. What did the data say?
That the expanded unemployment insurance benefits were not keeping people out of the workplace. It was other factors, And there were some states that actually... said no to the extra federal pandemic money. And this is what the studies were looking. They looked at the states that said no for the money and the states that kept the money, and they didn't find much difference in their employment rates. So FGA has been pushing this for a long time. As you said earlier, there was a raft of bills, UI overhauls that Tony Evers, the governor, vetoed last session. And FGA is urging Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin have brought many of them back, these same initiatives back, and where they recently passed the legislature, and we'll see what the governor does.
And so you said it before, but just as a reminder, as far as there's certain bills like you said, some of them are voting bills that we see bubble up. Some are Medicaid expansion. Some are unemployment. So there's been different bills at FGA's. Is the correct way to form, is it that they backed it or that they drafted it? Because like you said, ALEC as an organization is someone who just writes these state bills and then shops them around. And, some words get changed. Is that what this group is doing, or is it more just, hey, you should look at this?
No. That's interesting because I looked for that model legislation. There is one bill that hasn't advanced very far in this session that would rename the unemployment insurance to reemployment assistance. And that's something that Florida did in 2012. I found South Dakota also did in a few years later. So that, it's the same idea that. But I didn't see any evidence of other cut paste kinds of things. And when I talked to Republican lawmakers, they said, no, that we can't really, that usually doesn't work out very well because there's one size fits all. But what they do and what they've been very open about is having these kind of legislative conferences and these education meetings. Well, they'll fly lawmakers, almost always Republicans from different state houses to a 2-3 day summit. The last one was in Nashville. Last December, there was one in Florida. And then they'll have them for 2 or 3 days. They give them dinner. They pay for everything. And then they just say, look, and they talk, and they talk. They get them in our room where everyone agrees with each other. And this is our agenda. And you've probably been hearing from your constituents about, can't find employees, can't find workers, this worker shortage. And then they say, well, these are our solutions. And so when I talk to Republican lawmakers, they a lot of them very earnestly feel like they're responding to their constituents' concerns.
Oh, that's interesting.
But you've got groups like FGA that have the spoon that they're spoon-fed solutions, which honestly, what we've seen that the data and what when you talk to experts, it doesn't comport.
We're talking to Jacob Resnick, who's an investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch, about his newest article, Wisconsin Billionaires Quietly Bankroll Effort to Shrink State's Social Safety Net. And that's interesting what you just said, because I always think it's all of the data that comes out, because we're still at 2.4% unemployment, which is record unemployment for Wisconsin. We still have a bigger labor participation rate compared to most states, I think, as far as working age people. So in a lot of actual measurements, people are working in Wisconsin, and the problem becomes more we need more people. And yet the adherence to... there's some magical group that is just, if we could just get them back in the workforce, these things would fix. And so you're saying it's actually some of these Republican lawmakers you've talked to have said it just doesn't compute, that they believe that the latter is the truth.
Well, they'll say my constituents call me and they say, we have all these vacancies on our main streets and we don't have people. And there are real and they'll even say, and we know that there are demographic reasons for this. And you talk to DWD and they say, exactly, it's demographics where people are aging out, leaving the workforce. Mm-hmm. People are, and then there's also other structural challenges, affordable housing, transportation, childcare, things like that, that keep people out of the workforce. But FGA and groups like those are not interested in any of those kinds of solutions. Their solution is to cut what's left of the social safety net and to force people back, work or starve, basically, to put it very cut and dry.
Very cut and dry. So I guess we only have a couple minutes left, Jacob, but what kind of triggered you looking into this as far as as we said, the last thing you were looking at was crypto mines in Park Falls. So what brought this to your attention and was this is worth more people knowing about?
I've always been kind of on a labor beat, and I'm always very interested in the unemployment insurance and how much of that is a factor for the workforce challenges in Wisconsin. And I was in Madison when these bills came up, and I sat in the hearings and I was just really kind of impressed and kind of awestruck how quickly they were rushed through and how this organization that I had never heard of had so much clout and pull and had all much backslapping. Like, well, who are these guys? And I didn't know at the time when I was sitting in the hearing, but a lot of the leadership and people in the bills, the week before, they'd been there, the lawmakers had been their guests in Nashville, Tennessee for like a three day summit with other lawmakers. So they had been well briefed and they already knew what they were gonna do. And so when it came down to actually have the hearing, there was very little discussion except from minority party. And so I was like, how's this happened? That's what led me to look into FGA, who these people are and how they operate.
Well, super interesting. Thank you so much for writing the article. Thank you so much for joining us today. Jacob Resnick is an investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kristen. Bye.
All right. We'll be back after the break.
Slaving on the fence line, stretching those wires tight, digging and tapping and sweating in the sunshine. But I get off tonight. I got a date with a girl, a pretty rancher's daughter.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Metinair. And this might be a record for guests in a row since we've moved to the two-hour schedule.
It's been busy.
It's been busy.
It's been great.
And we're closing out today on a very fun note. Chrissy Kluge, who is the director of the Waukesha County Fair Exec... No, why does it say exec? Waukesha County Fair, right?
Yeah, I'm the executive director.
Executive director. That's yes. Where the EX was. I was like, wait, why is there an EX in the end? Executive director, Chrissy Kluge, Waukesha County Fair. How are you?
I'm wonderful, you guys. Thank you so much, Jane and Kristen. I'm so excited to be here with WAUK right downtown Waukesha.
You were just saying that you've like walked or drove by our studio all for years and you didn't even know we were here.
Knew you were here, but not specifically on air here, right?
Oh,
so
okay.
Everybody's got offices located in different areas. You just never know.
Yeah, absolutely. So Waukesha County Fair, July 19th, coming up.
Yes.
You were just saying, I was like, is this like stress time a little bit?
It is the we're in the thick of it. It's the heat of the moment. It's the calm before the storm or the chaos before the storm.
Sure.
Let's go with all that. So we're super excited. The Waukesha County Fair is running July 19th through the 23rd. So kicking off next week, Wednesday already, everybody. It's the 181st anniversary of the Waukesha County Fair.
Wow.
Yeah. Kristen, we're the oldest county fair in the state and the largest event held right here in Waukesha County. And when we are able to say that over the 5-day fair, on average, we interact or impact over 130,000 people. It's pretty exciting to say.
That is awesome. I didn't know it. 181?
Mm-hmm.
That is wild. How long have you been the executive director or involved with the fair?
Yeah, so this is my 20th year.
Oh, my God.
In a variety of ways. So just really, really fortunate for all the experiences. And I think just like any opportunity, it's about the people.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people don't realize is the Waukesha County Fair is actually a nonprofit 501c3 organization that plans, executes, and makes the fair happen each and every year for the community at large. So when everybody sees what happens, it's a volunteer-based group. So I answer to a 15-member volunteer board of directors who work and plan year-round to help bring these great things right here to our community for everyone to come and enjoy. And let me tell you, we got some great things in store July 19th through the 23rd this year.
Okay, well, let's hear about them.
Yeah, so... Well, I guess let's kick this off. So when it comes to specials, next week, Wednesday, July 19th, who doesn't love a deal? And next week is July, it's National Corn Dog Day. So we have, so we're doing $3 corn dogs at the fair, but really it's pick and save day for us. And what's better way to save? So it's $3 to get in, $3 to park, and it's one ticket rides. Each ride is only $3. What a steal of a deal, right?
Yeah.
So we're calling it Triple Play Wednesday. So come on out for all the fun and be able to check out just the key components of the fair. And then there's so much that's free with your fair admission, right? So this year we have incredible special events. One of them is the Nerveless Knox Jetpack Flying Water Circus. Jane, you guys, say that 10 times fast.
Ooh. I was going to say,
I'm intrigued.
So is this like guys on jetpacks like doing... acrobats in the air?
I mean, it's the similar concept. So there's going to be a big pool that's going to be installed starting on Monday. And then these acrobats, we fill the pool with water, and there's a jet ski that propels these acrobats up in the air with water power. And they go up and they do flips, tricks, and stunts in the air. So it's certainly like a must-see, must-attend opportunity. And, you know, it's with our partnership with Tom's Heating right here downtown Waukesha that we're able to bring this come together. So we're really excited for that. That certainly adds the wow factor amongst many other fair favorites and things that are to come. But yeah, so people can check that out free with your fair admission. Shows all through the day. You know, and we didn't talk about this, but the best place to find all the details is WaukeshaCountyFair.com.
Okay.
Yep. And then, of course, our social media page. But I know you guys, WAUK, you guys are super involved with a lot of things. Friday Night Live, we saw you down here.
Yeah.
So recently, June is National Dairy Month. And recently, we bring animals downtown Waukesha, start talking about the fair in June every year. The WAUK booth was right next to us.
Nice.
So I was able to see your team there, which was fantastic. And then... yeah, but let's kick it back. So July 19th, right? That's our kickoff day.
Yep.
That's that Triple Play Wednesday with special things in store. And even more special events, we have our pig, goat, and duck races that are free with your fair admission once you're on the grounds. Who doesn't love that, right, Jane?
Who's the easiest to corral of those three animals? Like, who's, you know what I mean? So it's pig, duck, goat.
Yep.
Which one actually sticks to the course and is the fastest?
So, okay, the best part, these animals, they come from an air-conditioned trailer out and through the circle, the ring, and they want to get back in the air conditioning as fast as possible.
Got it. Okay.
So I think it's kind of a race between them all. But I would say the pigs, they got that adrenaline rush behind them, so they just keep on going.
Okay.
But when you see ducks waddling and they're coming along, they go a lot faster than people realize. Which I think is the fun part in this stuff. So the coolest part. So this pig, goat, duck race group that we bring in, they're with Pleasure Valley Farms. They're actually a Wisconsin-based farm celebrating 108 years as an active family farm, which is incredible. So excited to bring that. Also on Wednesday, Seeing is Believing at the 2023 Waukesha County Fair. That's our theme this year. And we are bringing it with all the things, bringing out all the steps. And so we're bringing in the Jolly Giant Stilt Walkers with us this year. So people come to the fair on Wednesday, see the Stilt Walkers, and be able to interact in all the ways. Have you seen Stilt Walkers recently?
I haven't, but I am very tall. So I recently had a friend who tagged me in a picture of a Stilt Walker and said, look, it's Kristen.
It's you. okay. Well, maybe I think she needs to come out and like do a little competition of who's taller. I don't know. I love it. So, yeah.
So we only have a couple minutes left. So make sure, I want to make sure that like everything kind of what's the big headliner for the weekend as far as like the must that you haven't mentioned yet? Like what do you have to see?
Yeah. So I guess when it comes to Waukesha County Fair, music is key, right? So for us, our Miller Lite main stage is certainly the everything. So again, the Waukesha County Fair presented by Impro Corporation, July 19th through the 23rd. On Thursday, July 20th, we are welcoming country band Low Cash to the stage at 8 p.m. On Friday, July 21st, we're bringing 90s rock. Who doesn't love that? So we got POD and Puddle of Mud. That's also going to kick off at 8 p.m., right? Saturday, this is a biggie. So Saturday starts at 5:30, Saturday, July 22nd, and it is a 4.5-hour main stage starting at 5:30 with Winger, Warrant, and Skid Row. So if anybody likes the 80s rock, that direction, that is the night to be there. And then Sunday, we have the Love Monkeys at 2 o'clock. So Sunday, July 23rd, it's Sunday fun day. Who doesn't love it? The best days of the fair, enjoying all the sunshine, all the things. But there's great deals you can find on our website, online. There is a deal every single day. But, you know, so when it comes to family friendly, hitting all ages, we pull out all the stops and we work really hard to make it happen.
Say the website one more time.
WaukeshaCountyFair.com. It's the place to check out Seeing is Believing at the 2023 Waukesha County Fair, July 19th through the 23rd.
Jane, are you going with me?
National Corn Dog Day? Are you kidding?
I think we're going to get a corn dog.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Christy Glugie is the executive director of the Waukesha County Fair. Good luck in the final preparations. Have so much fun. I hope for good weather for you guys, and we will see you there. And we will see you on Monday when we do this all over again. Thank you for texting, calling, being part of the show. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Well, I know Monday morning I'll be back on the fence line, but it'll be all right. 'Cause that pretty little girl says she's gonna be all mine to see her next Friday night.